I thought we'd start with Tom's nutshell. I didn't have a choice. You're selling yourself short, or you mean the choice seemed obvious to you, but still you made the choice. Or you are making an excuse, ducking responsibility for a poor choice that you made. Because we always have choices. Even not making a choice is a choice.
Yeah, that's one. Sometimes I love the nutshells that just are totally self-explanatory. But every now and then, and you guys know me well enough to know that I can't help myself but explain the nutshell inside the nutshell. So it's, they become little baby little nutshell essays. But that was an important one because, you know, you hear. I actually challenge people, listen to any TV script that you see on TV, or anything going on, and count how many times the characters say, I don't have a choice. I didn't have a choice. It's like it is constantly in any kind of script, and it's constantly in our vocabulary. And it's like, and we don't even think about it. We don't necessarily, but it's like we know this part. When we listen to our language, it really tells us how we think. And so even if we don't think it literally, we are really, you know, sort of affirming that idea that I am helpless. I don't have a choice. So I think it's really important in emotional sobriety to know that part of our daily practice is knowing that how we're going to do according to the day, the week, our lifetime, whatever it is, has to do with the choices that we make.
It's so true, Tom. I mean, look, the heart of emotional responsibility is taking responsibility for ourselves and for the existence we create.
That's right.
And that's what you're really speaking to here is what kind of an existence is created when I defer or abdicate responsibility for my choices. And we see in our language, like you said, our language oftentimes will reflect our consciousness, right? Yeah. So if I'm saying something like, I didn't have a choice, what I'm saying is, I don't want to take responsibility for.
Well, yeah, I may actually be saying the choice seemed obvious, you know, and in fact, if we share value systems, that may actually be the case. So it's like we don't want to nitpick all language, but it's amazing how often just listening to the words somebody chooses can help them kind of get out of a stuck place. The bigger issue for us in emotional sobriety is when we start to pay attention to all the things we do not control, we get to talk about what we do control, which is our own rational thinking and our own choices.
In my early recovery, I would say yes to everything, you know, because I was observing that instruction to just get in the car, you know, just do all the things that you were reluctant to do in your former life. And now I think the choice that I'm having to make.
Well, now if we can play a little therapy here, I pick at language a little bit more. You say the choice I have to make, you don't have to make it. That doesn't give you credit where credit is due. That's the choice you're making. That when you first came into the program and you know, we don't think of ourselves as having much going for us at those times, but for you to make the choice to say yes all the time is a beautiful choice. You know, it's like,
yeah, and
you know, it really is the idea is since everything I'm doing is fucked up, I think I'll do the opposite, you know, the opposite George on Seinfeld, you know, it's like, I'm going to do the opposite of what I think. And that was a beautiful thing. But then the other thing, I just want you to do that other part where you go like, no, now you're choosing to be discerning.
I'm still surprised when somebody wants to hang out with me and like text me to come do something, I still think it's like a joke. Like they actually want me to like come over and do, you know. When I'm super busy and somebody invites me to some really nice social thing, and you know, because most of the time these days I just can't do it. Like I can't fit it in with all my stuff. You know, we always have a choice, and it's I don't know. It's navigating our limited options that make us who we are, right?
Well.
We could parlay this nutshell into a broader theme about the change what we can part of the Serenity Prayer.
Let's frame it a little differently, Patrick, because I think it may be confusing to people. Because when I talk about the serenity to change the things I can, sometimes that means surrendering and not being active in some way, right? In terms of, now you could call that an act, because what we say, acceptance is not a passive thing, right?
No, and when you're talking about the Serenity Prayer, it is courageous to practice that.
It is. Courageous. It's courageous to, so see, it's really, the good word was discerning that we were talking about. You know, before your yes was compulsive, you felt like you had to say yes because that would make you liked. That would make you somehow acceptable in the world, right? And see, we often come up with ideas like this, that we have to live up to some role to be accepted rather than be ourselves. And see, that's at the heart of a lot of our struggles, right?
Right.
Is that if I've got to live up to some idea of who I'm supposed to be rather than be who I am, I've created, Bill called it, an impossible way of life. It's impossible to continue to perform that way, right? Eventually, you are going to want to show up in your life more.
Right.
And necessarily so. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Mm. It's not. It's great. You know, it's...
No, but what you're pointing to, Alan, is we're always looking for that standard of measure. You know, where's the comparison? How do I gauge how I'm doing? You know, and it's, you know, and I just think how I'm doing, you know, as we get into emotional sobriety more, I think the answer to that question, how am I doing, is more of an essay question and answer than it is a short answer. Kind of, you know, I'm doing good. I'm doing better than this. That we can measure those things, and those things can be important. But you know, and I've said this recently on the podcast that one of the places my attention has been going lately is just how much we categorize and how much we measure things, and it's driving me crazy because you know whenever I'm thinking about something like that, I see if I can not do that. And I can't, you know, I'm listening to my own language. It's so automatic in our culture to measure and to compare.
Can I just briefly ask, so what is the drawback to that measurement that you're describing?
What's limited.
The negative?
It's limited. And I think also for those, and I don't think we have a corner on the market as a, but I think a lot of us, you know, we have that expression in the 12 steps of compare and despair. You know, I have a long history of comparing myself and never coming out on top. You know, it's like, it's a way, it becomes another way of my should monster puts me down. So I think mostly the first part of my answer is I think it's limited. It's like, you know, you can say, okay, well, this is where you are in relation to so-and-so. But what Alan's talking about is being, you know, showing up as yourself. You know, how are you doing? You know, just and we're not really equipped to respond to that question without lots of references to the outside world.
I'm so glad that a couple of my clients at work are people in recovery. Mm-hmm. And so when they ask me, how am I doing? I can actually tell them, you know, like a version that's approaching authentic. I give them the abbreviated version, of course, in a professional setting. I won't go long. Maybe for you guys, if you ask.
Well, yeah,
me,
I don't know about you guys, but I have to be careful because we, you know, it's a side effect of this business. Is we get asked that question by each other and so many people that really have an interest in it, that so I can be in a social situation and somebody can say, how are you doing? And I'm about, you know, three paragraphs in into telling them, then I look up and they're just going like, oh my God, how can I get away from this man? So and go like, oh, well, anyway, I buried the bodies and everything's turned out well since.
This sense of agency though is so important, isn't it?
Love it.
I mean,
yeah.
It really is. You know, the other analogy I've used oftentimes about this is, where is your center of emotional gravity?
Yes, I love that. I love it when you talk. Yes, good. I love that when you do that. That has meant so much to me.
You know, that it's the same concept that we're just talking about from a different perspective. But oftentimes that one has meant a lot to me because I can feel when I give that away. I can feel when I put that, when I project it into the world around me. And I can feel the difference when I keep it over my feet, because there's a sense of being grounded, right? A sense of being okay no matter what. right? Is that being okay depends on what I'm doing, not what's happening around me. See, that's a really a powerful feeling to have. And it doesn't mean that I can change what's going around me, but I can deal with it. You know, I was telling somebody today, you know, and this has been a theme for the, you know, last several days. It's not so much what is happening to us, right? It's how we're dealing with what is happening.
That's the very key. Absolutely. Perfectly said.
That's the key. And I was talking to a client this morning and last night, same kind of thing. Person was describing a situation where she was really frustrated with her partner. You know, she was doing some stuff in the kitchen, and she says, it seems so obvious that I need some help. And, you know, my partner's not responsive in any kind of a way. And then I go and ask. And he comes in and he stands there and doesn't take any initiative, right? And she's so frustrated.
That's hilarious. So he just goes into the kitchen and just, yeah, stands there like a sentinel.
Well, he's being available.
Yeah, right?
Well, we could say he's, I don't know, if we were in a group discussion, I'd say he's being available, you know, but he's not initiating is what you're saying. Yeah.
He's standing there, right? He's passive. He's passive. Participation is driving her crazy, right? So I said, so how are you dealing with the situation? Well, I just stand there and I swallow it and I get more and more resentful. The resentment simmers and I get more and more upset. I said, okay, well, let's look at this. Look, I tell you, you know, what I want you to think now, the problem's not the problem. The problem is how you're dealing with it. Let's think of all the possibilities that you have in terms of dealing with this, short of what you're doing and standing there getting resentful. That's not working good for you, right? A part of you ends up hating him, not wanting to kiss him, not wanting to touch him. I mean, all of this stuff. And there's another part of you that values a relationship with him. So what can we do for you to feel better about the situation, regardless of what he's doing? How can you participate or show up to feel good about yourself? So what do you think some of her possibilities are, Patrick?
She needs to not stuff her resentments, and she needs to add more self, and she needs to declare what she would like from him.
Okay, so she could be more direct about what I want. I'd like you to take more initiative.
Right.
She never said that to him. She just, right? She could do that.
She just expects him to, do it.
Okay, but here's the thing. There's what I just had this insight when you were describing this situation, Alan. It's like, I go, oh. And this, and I'm doing the presentation tonight for the seven o'clock group, and I'm this is kind of what I'm going to be doing it on. It's like when we say, "What can I need to change?" We don't automatically. I think we do more and more and more because we do it. We don't automatically think in terms of what do I need to change means. How do I need to think differently about it? Except we think, how do I need to change? What do I need to do differently? Well, you're going to do differently when you think differently. You know, and it's really just, I mean, the best term I know for it is one we've used through therapy all our careers, which is just reframing. It's like, you got to reframe the situation and see what your response, what are the things that you can do differently in how you're perceiving it, how you're interpreting it. And so what you're doing with what you're saying to the person is you're kindly, gently making the point that, by the way, whatever happens next, you're responsible for.
As you look at the situation, you can see possibilities. And this is where what you're talking about, Tom, comes into what kind of an appraisal are we making of the situation? What are possibilities in this situation? And making those appraisals are important. But see, sometimes we don't realize that there are so many possibilities. It's amazing that we can be so bright about so many things, but yet, in a situation like this, I only have one choice.
Yep. Right? I have no choice.
To stand here
we're
and
back
get
to no choice.
Yeah. We're back to what you said. So here's some possibilities I'll throw out to you, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a range of things because there are so many possibilities. One possibility is she's standing there, and this was something that she was doing for him because it had to do with his hosting his family, his parents, and stuff like that. And he wasn't involved. So she could go ahead, and as she's standing there, she could see him sitting there, and she could say, I'm going to go sit next to him. Mm-hmm. And she goes and sits down next to him and just stays there. And at some point, he's going to go, what are you doing? I'm just hanging out with you. Well, don't we need to get things ready? Possibly so. I you didn't seem to be that urgent about it, so I'm kind of taking your lead. That's one way. See, to go ahead and match what he's doing. Right.
Also, I don't want to make it complicated, but let's toss that in. I teach people this stuff all the time, and you cannot do that with attitude. If you do that with attitude and sarcasm and stuff like that, you are not doing it. It's like you got to show up.
That's another option.
It's not going to work.
Oh, it might not be the best time. We're looking at all possibilities. Right. You're not judging
them. They don't think about the idea of how they deliver the line, because they really do. Yeah.
So he could, one way to do this is what I have people say is, all right, if you do that, do it with as much attitude as you can. Yeah. So she could sit down next to him and she could, we call this exaggerating Sit down and then he says, what are you doing? I'm doing what you're doing. What do you mean? You don't seem to be that interested in creating a good experience for your family. And I've decided not either.
I'm sitting on my ass too.
Sitting on my ass too. So, you know, well, when they come in, they'll say, what happened, you guys? How come nothing's ready? I said, oh, we just don't really care that much that you're coming over. See, now that's not a great choice. Yes. We know that.
But that makes the point. Yeah. Yeah.
But that makes the point of how to do it another way, where you're not doing it with attitude. It's just saying, look, it's hard. So here's another possibility. Look, I want to create a great experience for your family, and I don't want to end up resenting you later on today. So I want to ask you for some of the things I want, because I'd love this to be a great experience for all of us today. I want to feel good about you. I want to feel good about your family coming. I'd like you to give me some more help in the kitchen. I'd like you to take some initiative when you come in.
There you go.
Another possibility. Mm-hmm. Another possibility is you mobilize his interest and motivation in it.
Yeah, that'll be my preference.
Well, it's probably, out of a lot of choices, probably the healthiest. There's no question, because it takes care of me, and it also doesn't damage my connection to you. It honors our relationship, right? And that's always going to be the best solution, is we act for ourselves without being selfish. See, we've talked about that. This is how it plays out in the situation that we're talking about, acting for ourselves without being selfish. But this goes to the point that Tom was making before. You see, if we really try to become thoughtful instead of reactive, a lot of times there are possibilities to discover that may not be our first thought. You know, you've heard Tom and I say, and Tom really, really brought this to my awareness, listen to the second or third voice.
Yeah, generally don't trust the first one.
Yeah, well, there was a theme at our home group a couple days ago. It was how to bring serenity to calamity. And everybody had a very interesting answer, but I didn't get an opportunity to share, but I was just thinking about how my initial impulse when faced with calamity is almost always toxic alcoholic Patrick. You know, it's anger, you know, it's frustration. It's something kind of incoherent. But in that pause, or in that second or third voice, that's the thing that, if I follow it, the outcome is generally much more positive.
Well, and the other thing, Alan, back to what you were saying, is it moves from the short answer or the multiple choice to essay answers. It's like, because when you're describing several things that this person could do, that is not expecting him to know what she's thinking, but to actually say some things like she's thinking. And it's like, when we're in a conversation and we're talking about several things, those are just some of the ideas. So the idea is, what we're really trying to do is get people to collaborate with other people to say, I don't know, you know, because we're going like, you know, so if I'm the other part of that conversation and Alan's saying that, I'm going, initiation. I don't know what you need me to do. Well, okay, I can tell you some things I could really use some help with. okay, thank you. I can do, you know, so it becomes conversational and we get unstuck. And to use Alan's way of thinking, the unstuck is basically to get fluid again in our conversation. Let's have a conversation that's not attitude, that's not adversarial. Let's have a problem solving conversation. It's not an easy thing to do when you get in primary relationships where you have a history and you got these reflexes, you know, they get hit easily.
Makes me think of my parents, who have been locked in the kind of the same essential relationship dynamics for what feels like my entire life. And I just know that if they were being consulted in the, right now, and, you know, Alan, for example, if you were to suggest to them, why don't you just declare what you would like on the holiday where the in-laws arrive and ask for what you want and give the other person an opportunity to suit up and show up and do it? They would say something like, well, I've tried that before and it doesn't work, you know? So I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to keep doing the same thing that fails every single time. Expect a different result.
I've tried that before, so I think I'll try it again.
Yeah, for 20 years. I mean, that's, you know, to give you an idea of, you know, where my, you know, software flaws come from.
Well, yeah, that's the thing for us to look at. It's not unusual. I mean, you know, that's one of the things we get with it, all this dysfunction when we work in a relationship. Otherwise intelligent people, you know, are really stupid when we get into these things with all this emotional content. You know, and I include all three of us in that thing. I'm not saying they, I'm saying we. It's like we have, you know, that's a tough challenge that we have on a day-to-day basis in relationships where we are close and where we care about what the other person says. And when we have a history that is less than, you know, wonderful.
You know, Patrick, when I hear somebody say that, because I've heard that response a lot in therapy. I've already thought that. I've tried that. I say, okay, well, you know, look, I know you think you have, but let's role play it. Enact it for me right now. Because what happens is, as soon as I ask someone to do it, so I say, all right, put your partner over here and talk to them about it. What I find is that what they think they're doing is not what they're doing. See, this is a very important thing. I'm not able to always trust my perception of who I am and what I'm doing as an infallible guide to the truth or to reality.
Yeah, or even that's it, exactly. Even an accurate read on reality, because it is by definition extremely subjective.
It's totally subjective. And so oftentimes I'll find somebody saying that, and I'll say, okay. Now, I want you to hear the difference between what you did and what I was suggesting. And see, that's how people discover new possibilities, is when they think they've done it. Now, that's one thing. Another thing I say to them is, let's say they role play it and they pull it off. They do it exactly like they thought that they did it. I'd say, what you're not leaving any possibility for is that he may or she may be able to hear you now when they couldn't hear you before. Things change all the time. People change all the time. And for whatever reason, that may have not been something that they could respond to and in a positive way. It doesn't mean that now is the same or here is the same as then, right? This is different. This is now. So always, if I keep bringing the past into the present, I'm going to continue to create the past.
Yes. I love that you leave open the possibility that you know, which in my cynical self says, yeah, that's not going to happen very often. It's like, because I'm a big believer in credit where credit is due. Somebody's done it right. It's like, it's a place where you can support. You can say, okay, well, let's try, you know, like you said, maybe that didn't work in the past, but let's try it again and see what happens. It's like, I love that. That's just great.
And then maybe we could tweak it a little bit. Maybe we can change this. of it or that. But see, it's this thing about, you see, it's an interesting comment that Fritz Perls made. And for a while, it took me a while to be able to really understand it and understand the meaning he was had, because it sounded like an abdication of responsibility, and it really wasn't. What he said is, you start to grow up and mature when you let the situation you're in control you and how you respond to it. So what it means is I used to think, well, that's an abdication of responsibility. No, I'm taking responsibility to be aligned with reality, to deal with the reality of what has happening now, instead of imposing my expectation of what is supposed to be happening.
And alignment with reality, that's one of those basic tenets of what really is emotional sobriety. You know, not to be offended by alignment. I love that. And I think I've heard you talk about that line by Perls. And I think, you know, sometimes what we do, and when we're, it's kind of a nutshell he's done. It's like we write it in a way that catches people's attentions. And the thing that gets your attention there is controls you. It offends you, you know, of like, what do you mean? But then if you look closer, you go, it's a trick. There's a little trick to that. It's like, no. It's like, this is not the same thing as somebody controlling you. This is about you paying attention.
It's bringing your awareness to the situation. Right on, Tom. Well, this was a good show.
Patrick, you are masterful. I'm serious. This is not, there's no attitude to this. You are masterful at being able to take your inventory and recognize things where you have come up short and you need to do that. You're really not good yet at being able to recognize and catalog the things you've done right and good and effective. So keep that in mind when you do that. Because when you tell me something you fucked up in the past, I don't doubt you at all. It's like, I got it.
Nor should you.
Well, partly because I identify. But the other thing is like, I do notice over the years that I do have an inclination to be pointing out the positives to you that you are kind of overlooking. So that's just my compulsive therapy.